Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more. Da-na-na-na,
da-na-na-na. Classic, da-na-na. Man. Classic. James, thanks so much for opening up, man, that thanks, way. Man. You're too young for that song, man. What's going on?
That's a good song. That's the work in the construction life.
Basically,
everybody should be playing that song.
Basically, that's what it is, eh? But then again, I guess, what music would you really choose today? There's not much good music to kind of, I don't hear anybody belting out any new tunes of today, man.
There's not much.
That's it. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for making the time and coming in here. And I know off mic, we were just talking about a bunch of stuff that we're going to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
Let me share the information. You can find James at on IG, Door Supply Official. And then his website is www.doorsupply.com. And then his email is build@doorsupply.com. I'm wearing Huracan renovation shirt. Thank you very much. High-Tech Concrete Cutting is a leading provider for all concrete scanning, x-ray, cutting, and coring throughout Ontario. They pride themselves in providing highest quality service in a safe manner, on time, and on budget. With the background, knowledge, and support of more than 30 years' experience from the owner Dan St. Ange, there is no job that they cannot quote or complete. Their fleet is equipped with top-of-the-line trucks and equipment, which eliminates any uncertainty for downtime and allows our highly skilled crews to complete your project without delays. Choose High-Tech Concrete Cutting for your next project and see the difference when dealing with the industry leaders. Find them at www.hightechcutting.ca and on Instagram at hightechconcretecutting. Do you dread the office? Are you spending your personal time on paperwork? Join the club. The good news is there's a solution that isn't hard or overwhelming. With SyncedUp's estimating and job tracking software, you can plan for it and hit your profit goals all while cutting your estimating time by up to 90%. Do you know where your money is going? Are you sure you're even making money? SyncedUp will show you exactly where your money is going with its simple budgeting tool, revealing those cash leaks so you can take back control of your business. Do you wonder if all those payroll hours are making you money or costing you money? SyncedUp tracks your unbillable labor, helping you optimize for project efficiency and ensuring each job is profitable. At SyncedUp, they're here to help contractors thrive, not just survive. Get a budgeting consultation with a SyncedUp expert looking over your shoulder to help you optimize your company's budget for free using the link in the show notes. If you love what you see, you can use the TCL discount and get 20% off on your first 6 months. Annual plan is required. Just click on the link in the show notes to book your call with the sales team and mention the TCL podcast. Check out SyncedUp.com and at SyncedUp on IG to level up your business. Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors, supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by ElastiChem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Time to sign up for Phil, the free construction marketplace and load tracking app for developers, engineers, and all contractors working in the civil construction industry. One other thing to mention is business and facility listings. Phil has the most complete database of quarries, pits, plants, and depots in Ontario, including all of the big names. So if you're looking for concrete, stone, asphalt, whatever, you'll be able to find it. You can also add your business listing or claim it. It might already be on the map, Sign up for free on the website at www.getphil.app. That's www.getphil.app. You can also search Phil in the App Store. Construction pros, brace yourselves for a revolutionary experience. HTGNA, your ultimate destination for state-of-the-art concrete floor preparation equipment, is about to change the game. Our model, surface preparation, is not just a task, it's our expertise, and your satisfaction is a guarantee. HTGNA isn't your average, it's a commitment. Our line of concrete floor preparation equipment stands tall as the epitome of industry excellence. Ready to take your projects to the next level? Dive into htgnorthamerica.com for a glimpse of innovation. Lock in a demo now and immerse yourself in the HTGNA experience. HTG North America, surface preparation equipment is our expertise, your satisfaction, our guarantee. And now, I know before we were just talking about the lovely Toronto downtown core, working in it, crap. And
forget it.
And you were mentioning they should do what the Greece do. It's like every other odd plate, whatever.
Yeah, every other odd plate into Athens gets their own day to come in and out of the city by car. Yeah.
So I can only assume if that's happening, maybe people are changing plates if they need to come into the city.
Probably.
That's probably sure. Happening because how hard is it to take two screws off?
Yeah.
Or even get a magnet and just slap on a new plate.
And in Greece, no one's looking, I don't think.
Nobody's paying attention to that, man. There's corruption everywhere. But, I mean, it's sad because there's lots of work in the core that needs to be done. You need vehicles, ideally vans, trucks, big trucks to do work, right? Yeah. So it's like, it's got to happen. You can't stop that.
Someone's getting paid.
There's something going on. I'm trying to get the politicians on the show so we can ask them direct. I've been told lately, I ask direct questions. I don't sugarfoot around anything, man. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, then what's the big deal? Aren't we supposed to have answers?
I don't understand. But then they're going to do the political dance around the question. So
I'll get back to you. It's not really part of my department. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Let's see what the investigation says. All that kind of crap. It's all bullshit, right? So it's funny. But okay, today we're going to talk about doors, though. Okay. We're going to kind of talk about, I guess there's a little bit of overlap because there's overlap between the door and the window industry too, right?
Yes.
What makes a person go down the door route and what makes a person go down the window route?
I think it's going to come down to, like, if it's a homeowner direct, I think they're going to be looking at things like whatever their needs are. And then if you get in the house and you take a look at the door, it's probably old like the window, so you might suggest to do both.
Yeah.
But it's just going to come down to usage, right? Like if they're having leaks on the windows, then they're going to call for the windows. If they're having leaks on the door, they're going to call for the door.
So what's making these units fail faster than they should be failing? And is it just, what's it called? Shrinkflation. Mm. You know how the whole industry now, the grocery industry, how they're packaging things smaller. Well, it's not even just the grocery industry. It's every industry now. Like your detergent and all kinds of products are all shrinking, but you're paying the same price, if not more. Right. So when it comes to windows and doors, are manufacturers or companies coming out there and they're creating an inferior product so then it could fail in about 10, 15 years so they can get replaced again? I don't know.
I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know if they're doing it for that reason. I think that, you know, if I were to make an assessment on it, it's because it's profitable, right? People are looking at how much they're making, not concerned with what it's going to cost somebody later on. Because regardless of the quality of something, overall, when it's brand new, it works.
Yeah.
Right? So I think people just assume that it's good. They assume that the person that you're dealing with is trustworthy, like they believe themselves to be, so they assume it's good information that they're receiving when it's often not.
How often does the front door gets replaced on a home?
Should be once
of a lifetime, right?
Should be once,
because you're choosing a front door based on whatever cladding material it is, whatever your front steps are, whatever material you're choosing, all your color tones and your soffits or whatever, that's the color you're choosing and that's your front door.
Yeah, so material quality.
Yeah. So it's like if you're only doing it once, that makes your job a lot more challenging, no?
No, so I look at it in a different way. So let's say, for example, I come to you, right? I do business with you. Your business to me is good only today, right? So it's all of this aftercare service or the onboarding, the post-care service, the way that you're going to set up sort of referral-based programs, the business part of it.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're good at the business part of it, then what matters to me is I bring you such a great experience for transparency, communication, reliability, timeliness, and these other referral programs and different things that I plug in, these incentives, we'll call them, that you want to go talk about it, that you want to tell about it. So not only is your new door sort of worthy of photos and discussion, but the whole experience around it is something that you want to tell about so that other people will come see me. And that's where the value is on each individual client, which is what makes the business, I think.
Isn't it funny, James, how, and I'm guilty of this too, we spend so much time and effort and care trying to decide what our front door is going to look like. Mm. When's the last time that you went through your front door to either enter or exit your home? Isn't it you're always going through the garage or going through the side? Or
well, I would think if you build something that's worth going through, you might go through it.
But the thing is, you drive a vehicle, you come home, especially in today's day, like with the amount of car theft that's going on, you park it inside a garage so you could be safe. So now you're inside the garage already. So you go through the pass-through door going into the house. So that's my point, is that you hardly ever open the front door, but that front door is there identifying the front facade of the house, right?
Well, that's the thing. But even if you don't go through it, everybody else is going
and people walking by the neighborhood see it, and then they're like, I pay attention to it. When I travel, I pay attention to doors. Yeah. I just pay attention to what kind of front door or door they're using in that dwelling, right? I'm curious about it. Yeah. So you can look at it. So it's the same thing. And then I just frown upon seeing the standard BS. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like, just the...
It's almost like a step up or a notch up from a builder grade kind of. You just pull it off the big box store shelf and then just put it on the cart and then install it, right? And I'm like, those doors don't even need to be existing, right?
Well, that's actually a perfect point. So there's a misconception right there, right? So you have a whole host of experience in this business, running successful businesses in the space. The Home Depot door and the builder grade door, it's the same.
No, of course it is.
It's the same. So these guys that sell these, that they say that they're manufacturers, let's say, or whatever, buy a custom door. It's the same thing.
It's not custom door.
It's the same thing. We talk custom in terms of you chose the color before I painted it at the store. It was already on there. So it's red or black. Now you can get orange if you like. And now it's $5,000 to paint. I mean, come on. And that's just one example, right? But there's this whole issue in the business that because you're only buying a window or a door once, maybe twice in your lifetime, there's this whole ignorance gap that the professionals take advantage of. So people end up overpaying for things that they didn't need to, but no one's telling. No one's explaining.
Goes to back people, to the profitability part.
All the way back.
Yeah.
Right? And there's an ethics component as well. Like, you don't need to be charging. Like I was telling you before we got on, I sat with a client two Wednesdays ago, and we did a whole house of windows, and it was about $18,000 with a front door, okay? They ultimately got their trust, and I asked them, well, who else did you see? What were the other quotes that you got? They got quotes for
$45,000. Yeah.
I'm providing the best quality product in windows and doors that you can get on the market in that category.
How are they more than double?
Because they just put the margins in it. And because everybody's operating in the industry in similar fashion, everybody assumes that the quote is good, right?
Are they questioning your number, thinking what's wrong sometimes with your product?
They ask me, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
Is this a scam? So I say, come down to the showroom.
So why don't you just charge more?
Because I don't think that I need to make $20,000 on a project that doesn't make sense. It's unethical to do that, right? So I just had a son, 6 months old, right? Shout out to son Osiris, right? Yeah. So think of it like this. This is the way that I frame the story under my circumstance. I have a son. My wife's at home. She's taking care of him. The dollars matter. I'm not a multimillionaire yet, right? The dollars matter. So imagine if I sit down with somebody and I know that, you know, they're a professional. I should be able to trust them. And they give me a quote. $45,000. And I liked him, so I assumed that he told me the truth. I would tell him the truth. And then I pay. And later I find out that the value of the product that he sold me to do my house was $6,500 plus the install cost. He overcharged me $25,000-$30,000. How's that going to feel?
It's not going to feel good.
Right? So yeah. I sit with people and I say to them, let's assume after I guide you through this whole process, you find out that they're charging you $30,000 more than you're supposed to. How long does it take you to save $30,000 after tax dollars?
It's a lot.
Right?
It's a lot of an effort. Yeah, of course it is.
And then I ask them, how long does it take that person to get it from you? 4 or 5 hours total combined max. Right? So take your time to make this decision because it's going to have an impact on your life. $20,000 can stretch a lot of different places.
Yeah. You could have been doing another rental. You could have been doing something else that you wanted to do, right?
Yeah. So that's what we do is we're guiding people on the products that we have, helping them understand. So even if they say, hey, James, you know what? That's still too rich for my blood. If they go and make a decision that's not really too good, they understand how to negotiate. They understand what to look for so that they can get the best price possible, meaning that I always left somebody better than I found them. I like that. So,
do you think the value of a celebrity in construction, aka reno actors, endorsing a door, window, or whatever, you think there's value there? You think the homeowners look at it and like, I trust this person, so if they're saying that this product is good, I'm going to buy this product from them. But I think, like you said earlier, I think 99% of the homeowners have no idea that that person has never installed a door in their life.
The homeowners just don't know, right? It does add value. Like to the question that you asked, it does add value.
That a recognizable face is attaching themselves to a product that they're considering, not necessarily a brand, but a product that they're considering, that they'll go, well, if he or she is saying this is a good product, then I should believe them.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's creating this perceived value, which I do think is important. Like I think perceived value has value from a monetary perspective. Like this is how you build a brand.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can have some premiums on things. You think Louis Vuitton or any of these brands, they're not really worth these dollars, like the cost to make it, but there's perceived value.
The perception
value
of it and how it's been positioned
status,
in the consumer
all
market.
The stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. But people leave knowing what they got. It's when you have a celebrity endorsement to create this trust, and the product that they receive is still builder grade, but that was charged a premium value. Does it make sense? Like, well, if it still has the same lifespan, but I charged you $5,000 more for
it. See, with the celebrity attached to it, the consumer might think it makes sense because the product got more expensive because they had to offset the endorsement costs of having the celebrity attached to it. That's where I go back to. It's like, I agree with you. Trust me, there's salespeople pushing an initiative that's driven towards profit instead of pushing towards a good quality product for the homeowner.
Right. So did we? So the question that I would ask then is, if I could ask, is did you buy the product knowing it was shit, but Wayne Gretzky's face was on it? So you're like, yeah, I want that.
It's a good question. I mean, I think when it comes to construction, lots of homeowners do not want to spend the effort to find out if it is good or bad.
Okay.
They rather have the solution to the problem that they need solved.
This is us.
But they look at the whole industry like, I need a door and I want the least amount of headaches possible.
Yes.
So it's whoever, like the same thing that you know this, like when you think about something that's in your head, then you travel and you start driving around town or whatever. And that thought is visually being represented in everywhere you go.
Yes.
So you start thinking about the whole red car theory crap, right?
Yes, yes.
And so the moment a homeowner is interested in a front door, honey, babe, we need a new front door. Right? Mm. They start thinking front door, and then all of a sudden they're going to start noticing on social media, on the web, in their feed when they're scrolling through, whatever.
They're
going to start seeing doors, but you're going to start seeing the majority of them are going to be those people that you just described.
Yeah.
The profitability people.
This is okay. So this is how we combat this. Like to what you said, people don't want to do all the footwork. Okay, I understand that we're all busy, whatever excuses, fine. I'm not going to try and change people's way of making decisions in that sense. So I'm happy to do all the footwork, create all the guides, use the internet, have podcasts like this, do whatever it is that I have to do to send a message out. Because if someone's looking for a door and they're going to see three other companies, if I can be in that conversation, regardless of if they buy through us or not, they will be better off than I found them.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Knowledge-wise, or they end up working with us, and that's great because now they can tell somebody and on and on and on. And I like that. right? I think that's the way that business should be done.
But that's not the way that the majority of the business is done.
Correct.
Especially like, okay, we're in a downturn in the economy right now. Lots of people are not working that much because lots of people are not renovating that much. Mm-hmm. If you are renovating and you're working, then it means that you've pre-planned really well and you've got a lot of larger scale projects. Mm-hmm. And you probably were lucky enough to line up a bunch of smaller scale projects all back to back. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure that you're having conversations about numbers. You're getting clients talking to you about, can we pull back a little bit on this? Can we do that? Can we hold off on that? We'll do that next year, because everybody has so much uncertainty going on right now. So I think right now people are being even more conscious of where they're spending their dollars.
Okay.
So that's what I'm assuming. But you're still seeing these guys come in at 45 and you're coming in at 16, 17.
So I have this conversation often. People often will this conversation goes exactly like what you're saying. So market downturn, prices are tight, people want to negotiate. Okay. The economy's bad, however it plays out. So let's say that there are 150 companies in the market, all in the same industry. We'll just use doors, okay? All of them are still in business right now.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing at least one deal a month, right? Yeah. For sure, right? Yeah. Probably
they're
more.
They're keeping the lights on, if not more.
Okay.
Of course.
So if we have me and 149 others, and I find a way to get people to hear my story, and I just take one deal from each of them, which won't affect the way that they do business at all, right? Am I in a bad economy anymore?
No.
No. So this is what we're doing, right? And how do you do this? You have to make sure that your approach to the business, in my opinion, is customer-centric, for real. You don't just, it's not just something you say. And you make the experience something worth talking about. Because at the end of the day, I don't need someone to guarantee that they'll purchase from me. I would like to have a conversation.
Just want to get a moment to educate.
That's it. And client. Even if you don't buy from me today, maybe even that experience will be so good that it's worth you telling somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I'm looking to maximize. Right. If I do that well, we're successful. And that's why this is working.
How long have you been in the door game now?
So it was a transitionary business. So in 2013, I got into blinds, manufacturing for developers. So supplying to the high rise,
yeah.
Which turned into people asking me, like, from high rise to, hey, I got my cousin's house, which turned into, can you do windows, which turned into, can you do doors? So it's been a progressive stretch since 2013.
And now you're just focusing on the doors?
Focus on doors, focus on windows. We bring Payne's Windows. I know you have David on here. So I run David's company with him. In addition to the doors, this business is very, very unique in that majority of it is supply. We supply across Canada and the US.
You're shipping right across? And
yeah, we're shipping right across.
Wow.
And then Payne's Windows, again, same thing. We're shipping across Canada. We're shipping across the US. So the partnership is good. It's top notch.
I like what he's done. And I'm sure that you're doing the same thing. Is like that whole online experience where it's like, You're getting rid of the tin men, for lack of a better word, of salespeople, right?
Yeah. No salespeople at Payne's. We took that away. No salespeople with us. We took that away. Yes, there's something to buy once we determine if what it is that we have is for you or not. Like, then it should be a no-brainer. But everything that you do that's worth something starts with a conversation. So that's what we want to have with people.
So I want to get into the doors. What should you have in a front door? I mean, I've always told clients when I first put the very first multi-point, I would say probably about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, this is pure ingenious. I think I just like, this is what every door should have.
Yeah.
So I don't know. How are your doors designed? How are you putting them all together now?
So essentially, in a nutshell, what we've done is we're building front doors that use the highest quality materials on the market. There's not tiers. We look for the best hinges, the best sills, the best frames. We're taking away anything that's organic and replacing it with synthetic so there's no rot, including sort of the underbelly of the sill. Usually there's a piece of wood there to give it its structure.
Yeah.
Gravity's bringing water down. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Right? So we replace that.
It's just when it's going to leak.
Yeah, replace that with composite. So we're using high-grade paints, high-grade sheen coats. We're doing groovings, mostly all fiberglass, some steel. It just never needs to be replaced. You get a good installer, or if we're installing locally, never needs to be replaced. Everything else is the people. That's how we're doing it. It's straightforward.
What's the warranty and everything on it?
Like lifetime.
It's like, so there's like, there's no issues with
there's
doors.
There's no issues.
You'll scratch pain from moving in and out or something happens or keys fall or whatever, but usually touch up.
Like, yeah, you'll have touch up. You'll
yeah,
have touch
right. Up. So, and then I'm assuming these days everybody's, is black the number one? Black's the number one, right?
Lots of black, yeah.
Listen, 15 years ago, black was not the number one.
What was it?
It was those, the classics, right? It was either white or it was sandalwood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The sandalwood. What's the third one? Sandalwood, and there was another one, like a different version of sandalwood. But those were the colors.
Yeah.
And I think it was maybe 5 or 6, I would say maybe 7 years ago, people just started assuming black, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was black 15 years ago. I was probably one of the first guys that did my garage door black, and I made the manufacturer spray it, and they made me sign it that they will not be you know, responsible for it if because it was getting full sun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, listen, I believe that your door is a good enough product. I believe that if you paint it well with a good product paint, I don't think it's ever going to, and sure enough, 15 years later, it still looks exactly the same.
Good.
And it's black. But now the neighborhood is all showing up with black doors, right? Because that's the standard now.
Black doors, black windows,
Yeah. You just kind of have to go that way. If that's the color you want, that's the color you want, right?
I like it.
Before then, it was like, we can give you dark brown.
Yeah, the extreme of it, right? Brown,
I know, and that was it, because they were concerned about the black, right?
Yeah.
But so everyone's asking for black now.
Pretty much, yeah. There's a lot of black doors, I would say probably 60%.
And then on the logo here, on the design, so you're getting all these entry different ideas. These are all custom off? Like, well, how does it work?
Yeah, so for the fiberglass, there's a lot more customization. Mainly, that's what I'm doing. People do want some steel customization, so it might be 8-foot custom glass, something like that. The fiberglass is where it's at because it doesn't dent the same. It doesn't expand the same as the steel will, so it's got a longer lifespan. Takes heat less because it's not metal conducting heat. So that's where they go. And there's a lot of customizable options on a fiberglass door, from groove widths to different design styles. We do it all by hand, so it doesn't have that CNC look to it, which is nice. Takes a little bit longer, but it's nicer grooving.
Yeah.
Colors, stains, glass, shaping, lots of stuff.
What's the widest door you can make?
48.
And what, 96?
108.
108?
Yeah.
You can go to 9?
Yeah, we're one of the only companies that do 9 very well. So we like to do
9x4 door?
Yeah, 48 by 9, 48 by 8, and then standard by 48, which is nice.
What's the interior? That interior has got to be at least 12 feet, if not higher, at the front, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a 9-foot door.
Yeah.
I went to a former client's house because he asked me to come by because he was having ant and bee problem in his house now.
Yeah.
And he was trying to figure out where it was. So I stopped by, and then we were hanging out just having a coffee. And then I remember that he got this really elaborate front door, and he really wanted this specific door. No handle.
Okay.
Like no doorknob handle, just a big pull bar, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny how there's a handle on the inside so you can exit, and it's like traditionally what you do. But then upon exiting and having to come back in, I had to split second question myself, I'm trying to remember how this door works again, right?
Yeah.
And it's the handle that just lifts up.
Oh,
so it's one of those, right? And it unlocks the whole multi-point thing, right?
Very cool.
And so it's got the deadbolt, so it protects it that way, but... You know, he's a European guy, German, so he likes all these different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I like that, but it's almost like that split second that if you didn't know about that door or how it operates or how it, you know, things work, it's you'd have to ask. You have to knock on, well, how do I open this door again, right?
Is it a pivot or no? It's on hinges.
No, it's not a pivot. It's on hinge. Yeah.
Interesting. How wide is it?
This one's got to be 42.
But it's made of aluminum.
No, it's wood.
Oh, it's solid wood.
Solid
wood.
Okay, so it's not hemlock. It's I'm gonna say Douglas fir.
Nice.
It's nice. That's the style that he wanted. Which is, and then you got the matching windows and everything, all wood, right? So
what's the height?
The height was 86 or sorry 96. Yeah.
Yeah. So he probably paid.
Oh, he paid a penny.
Yeah, yeah.
He paid a whole penny on that package.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he, you know, on the back windows, he had large scale windows.
Mm-hmm.
I think on one floor, I think they're 12 feet wide.
Modern style.
Yeah, completely, yeah, yeah. Right? That's just, and that's what he wanted. He wanted the wood on the outside.
Yeah.
And he wanted the aluminum on the outside. Or sorry, he wanted the wood on the inside and the wood aluminum on the outside, right?
Very nice.
And that's the style. I mean, he went with the black on the outside, white stucco. I remember having so many meetings about the stucco and the certain pattern that he wanted to do. Like he was just already, and I like clients like that. They've already done their homework. They know what they want.
Rare.
Yeah, I know it's one percenter. That's the thing about it. They just want it to be installed properly, taken care of properly, managed properly. That's all they want. But they already know what they want.
But that's why they say, you know, if you sell to rich people, it's harder, but you make more money. And then by building a business that can take care of people of that caliber, you can then take all that profit that you made and build something that can serve as sort of the general population.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to go.
So what's your turnaround now? I know that we had the pandemic years and it was all BS and it was just insane supply chains. And then people, I remember we were doing a job during that time. And I think we had, I'm going to say 18 or 19 week for a window, 18, 19 week for a window. And then when it arrived, it was wrong.
Yeah.
So then they had to mad rush it because obviously this window was coming from Europe.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, we can get it there in possibly 12 weeks.
Mm.
So what's it now? Like, is it, are we back to normal levels now?
Yeah. So we've been 6 weeks or less year round. We stay that way. We've got a pretty sort of focused approach on what our ideal client is. Anything outside that, we just turn the business down.
See, it's smarter, I think, because I think that a lot of these other companies have this mindset that if you just throw a big wand over everybody and you sell an inferior product, you'll get more sales out of it. I think it's incorrect. I think you're better off finding your clients that you really want to work with and then give them exactly what they're looking for, and you'll be more profitable that way. That's what I think.
But that requires time and effort, Manny.
But that's building a business. That's building a brand. And this is all relevant. It's not just a door company. This is relevant if you're an electrician, a plumber.
Yeah.
Like if you want to, I honestly think if you cast a whole net on everybody, you will not make as much money as you would if you specifically look for your target, the people you want to work with.
I agree, but that's work, Manny. And people don't want to do work on the front end for a long time for free in order to have a lot of good business on the back end. And if they so choose, be able to kick their
feet. But that was never the case, James. Like that's not, like, the older generation always did that. They planted seeds knowing that they're not going to get a sale this year. They're going to get a sale next year.
Yeah.
They knew that.
Yeah, but look at the state of the world around us. Even though, like, I personally agree with what you're saying, if you look at the world around us, the state of the world around us, no, they disagree. Their behavior says they disagree. Like, I have this thing I like to say is if I could meet everybody at any point in time and just turn the volume off them and just watch their behavior, yeah, I'd know everything I need to know.
Of course, you don't need to hear anything.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. So I try to pay attention just to what people do, because that tells me, you know, what you value, what you prioritize, the level of integrity that you have or don't have. That's what I'm looking for.
What's your perspective on consumer behavior? Like, we're living in such a digital age. Like, I have yet to find a product that I can't find on Amazon, right? Because I just joke sometimes, I'm talking to people and I'm like, just check Amazon, see if they carry it, right?
Yeah.
And sure enough, they carry pretty much everything. I haven't even checked for windows or doors. I'm assuming, I'm assuming there's doors there. Like, Amazon in the US is selling houses.
Are they?
Yeah, you can order a module house and it will show up as an Amazon box and your house is there. They're doing that already.
On Amazon. I'm going to have to look that
up. But that's where I'm going back to consumer behavior. I'm trying to figure out how, I don't think consumers today want to understand value. I think they want to understand convenience.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think people do overly value convenience. Like, I'll have calls with clients and they say, well, like, it might be a day late. Well, you said it was good. It's your door.
Yeah.
It's being made by hand.
Yeah.
There's so many individual factors we have to quality test it. Because if I put it on your house and then I have to come back and do something to it, you're going to be more upset than the one day that it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't get many of those, but they do exist. I think people do shop for convenience.
Oh, there's been clients like that I've had where it's just like they're a stickler for exactly the dates and stuff, but it's bullshit. Normal. But I just think that consumer behavior is kind of changing, and I think it's really changing for the negative in the construction industry. I really was hoping in my time that consumers would be better educated on what's good, what's better, and what's best. And understand that if you want that good, which is convenient and it's cheap and it'll be fast to you, that expected that it's going to have faults later on down the line and you might have to replace it eventually. Yeah. But if you're choosing a better or best, You're never going to have to deal with anything other than seeing the person who provided that service and product to you at your neighbor's home.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And that's what you really want. You don't want to see the person that you've chosen return to repair or replace.
No, ideally, no. No, there's some accounted for, but no, yeah. You don't want much of it.
But you don't want that, right? So,
at all.
So when you're shopping and you're looking for a product, I don't think you should be choosing good. I think you should be looking at better and best.
Yeah, but how do you shift? Like, the construction industry itself is very broken.
Always will be.
It's basically one big, do we swear on this podcast? It's one big fucking flea market.
Yeah.
Where customers are already, they're already coming into the conversation knowing that no matter what price you tell them, they're going to negotiate.
Right? I hate that.
And that you'll let them do it.
I hate that.
Right?
Well, I'd stop letting them do that.
But this is, again, back to 1%. You're putting yourself in a unique position as a 1%. You're understanding the value of things because look where we're sitting, right? Because of your decisions, quality output. Everybody else is just, not everybody else, I want to be specific. A majority of the industry, it's basically just a free-for-all flea market. And people have no business acumen or limited business acumen. And you look at people doing deals and then people are getting ripped off and skipping jobs because they look at what they've done and they're like, I can't even finish this. It's impossible for me to finish this.
Yeah.
And then one other shitty guy tells another guy, hey, you know what? If it's under 10 grand, they won't even mess with you in small claims court. It'll be forever. It's not worth it.
Yeah, so they'll start just hearing a bunch of little tricks and stuff.
Right.
Like
all
that.
These things. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I shouldn't tell them this, you know, but all these things. And then you have over 60 years, what's culminated into this, right? This cesspool of chaos.
So why do you think so many more younger guys are getting into the industry then?
Same reason. Money. Fast money.
That's all. So they see a lot of money up front.
I think it's the same reason people get into the trades that they've always been. I think the trades served a very important purpose when you're an immigrant coming in from another country and all you have is your hands and you don't have the language yet and you're able to show your proficiency with your hands.
Yeah.
This is good. But that has spun off into what we all experience now in this business, which is it's nonsense. We're just ripping people off. We're overcharging. Like people will say, for example, like if we talk about a window specifically, you do a brick to brick exchange, like a brick to brick installation or a retrofit. People will just sell a person retrofit because it costs less to close the deal. This is wrong. This is the wrong way.
I don't understand retrofits, man. Why do we leave a portion of the old and then put the new on top of that? I don't understand that. Because it's easier, right?
Because it's profitable.
It makes more money.
Yeah, it closes more deals. Give me a better price. Okay, well, the only way I can do that is if I do a retrofit. What's that? Well, I'm just going to leave your existing trim and your jam. I'll tell you're going to shrink the window, insulate it poorly, and all that mold and rot that you have is going to stay. Just paint it.
Yeah.
But save you $3,000.
That's, well...
Or whatever.
Is it worse in the States? Are they a little more restricted when it comes to windows and doors?
States is a finicky market. I don't know a lot about it. I'm now going in now to see how, because we opened through Payne's a shop in Iowa. So we're going to see how that market works there. It's a little bit different, but it's big players, right? The Pellas, the Andersons.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. They've been there a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. We're right in their backyard. So they don't like that.
Of course they don't like it. But the thing is, competition's fine.
Yeah.
That's simple as that. Give people variety. There's lots of options out there.
Yeah, but you know the States. Like, it's bigger players, and they'll do things to squeeze you out.
Yeah.
So you just got to play strategically. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that these guys that are getting into construction, are they lifers? I don't think they are.
No, because it's like anything. If you're not good, if you don't have strong business skills, right, in a competitive space, you'll get squeezed out, right? So you'll play as long as you can, and then you'll get squeezed out. And that's the nature of any business, right? You have to know the game you're playing, and you have to play it well, right?
Where else are you going to expand to? Or are you going to stay right here? This is it?
That's it. That's
yeah.
it. I think that there's enough market to grow at a very reasonable rate, serve a very specific type of client. We have a very wide reach. I haven't even tapped into all of what's available here. My pitch is very straightforward. when it comes to sort of builders and architects and things like this is like, you go to a builder. I know you're used to using builder grade stuff. Just set yourself apart. Tell the client that they're going to put something that they'll never have to replace, where everybody else they're considering buying a property from is going to put all the cheapest. And chances are, right, my money's on, they'll probably buy from you. And you'll probably be able to increase the price of that property over your competitors.
Are people still building installing doors, dog doors?
Never had one. Had a peephole, a couple of those.
A peephole? What do you mean, the gate thing?
Like where you just look through.
Oh, just those ones? Nobody's doing that anymore.
People do it.
Why, they don't want a nest or something like that?
They still have it. They're like, no, I want the people. What if it dies?
But they...
Hey.
What if... I don't... But there's a camera, so people have...
Sometimes you got to give the people what they want.
You're always afraid of putting your eye there and there's some sort of hitman on the outside. Like, I don't understand that.
No harm, no foul.
Like, hopefully but they still want peoples, really?
Yeah. I probably get, like, maybe 4 or 5 a year. And I try to talk them out of it. And it's not like it's sort of an older crowd. It's like middle-aged.
Really?
45, 55.
Really?
They got the Ring doorbell. And they say, no, we need it.
And they got cameras there too?
Oh, yeah.
But they still want a people.
Want the people. Yeah.
I find that weird.
Hey.
But that's the thing is I have not seen anybody do anything newer, a new version of a doggy door.
No, because eventually you're going to have guys trying to sneak in that.
That's what I'm thinking. I think they probably are going down the side because of security purposes, right?
Yeah. So
can you, on your door... Is there like a whole sledgehammer and kicking in? Is that a testing kind of thing? Or
yeah, so...
I remember that way back when, like 15 years ago, there was like a whole testing thing with hammers.
Yeah, so multi-point locking is really the tool that's going to protect against the most against some type of a break-in. So we had a lady a couple of years ago who had a break-in. And we didn't do the back door. We did the front door. They couldn't get through the front door, so they went through the back door.
They tried to damage the front door?
Yeah, they couldn't break through the multi-point lock.
She wasn't home?
No, she wasn't. No one got hurt. Everyone
so that's making a lot of noise, right?
Yeah.
So they broke the back, and it was a swing door in the back?
Yeah, it was a swing door in the back.
And they got through that one?
They got through that one easy. So insurance covered it. We did the back door with multi-point, and that typically, and that's really the only upsell there is, if you will. Like everything is above board as far as quality goes. There's no way to downgrade. The only upgrade is multi-point on standard heights, so 79 or less, or 80 or less.
Yeah.
8 feet, 9 feet, all multi-point, mandatory.
9 foot on a multi-point?
Yeah.
And you're going 4 points or more?
No, still three.
Still 3 points?
Still three.
On a 108?
Yeah. Yeah, still three. You can put roller catchers on the top and the bottom if you wanted to. Not necessary. The real issue is the quality of the install. It has to be square.
Yeah, you got to bang on. So the opening has to be...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but those are typically going on new builds only.
So what's the finishing on the hardware that people are asking for? Are they still going black on black or are they doing some sort of accent?
No, all different. There's a lot of black.
What's
a lot
the variety that you guys are offering here? Like, I mean,
there's so much. There's levers, there's thumb handles, there's satin nickel, there's gold color, blacks, pretty standard. We can paint it if you wanted it.
The handles and the hardware as well,
finish,
too?
Yeah, we have to take it in custom finish.
If someone wants a specific color?
Yeah, we did a door for a lady's pink.
The door was pink?
The door was pink, so we refinished the pull bar in a different tone.
What was the color of the cladding?
Pink.
No, sprayed it. No, the actual, what was the cladding, like a brick or was it a stucco?
Oh, on the house, it was brick.
What brick. Color was the brick?
I think it was like a gray.
It was a pink door?
Project. Yeah.
What did it look like? Did it look like what I'm thinking it looked like?
Shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. But people want what they want. As long as the design overall is a nice design, we'll do the project. If we think it's something that's really... color is fine. If we think the design is something that's quite questionable, we just won't put our name on it. We just decline.
What was the color of the hardware if it was a pink door?
It was an off-color pink. So it's a little bit separate, but it was a pull bar.
Pink too?
Pink too.
Full slab door?
Yeah. Fiberglass.
I don't get roofing, it. Yeah. What was the color of the garage door?
I don't know. I didn't see the spot. I didn't install it.
I don't know. I'd have a problem with that. I remember back in the 80s and 90s, you had a lot of, I'm not going to get too racist, but a certain group of people were just choosing like these really pukey greens.
Right.
Purples. Like there's no way. I would see these homes and I'm like, there's no way in the manufacturing assembly of those doors or windows, they actually ran that paint color on that. So that must have been painted on site here afterwards, right?
You like what you like. I'm not going to judge anybody on their color choices.
But just when it gets to pinks and purple or lime greens, or these are really odd colors that will not. And plus, to be a neighbor, right? And you're next to that. Like, where's your house? It's next to the pink house, the pink door house.
Yeah. People like what they like.
No, it's true. I mean, it's their house. They can choose whatever they want. They want to get funkiness and they want to do that. That's great. Whatever. There's some crazy homes in Toronto. I know there's a home in the East End. He's got possibly every possible version of a gnome or a figurine or a stuffed animal. His whole front yard and the steps and the porch and everything is just, if you were to fall into his front yard, you're going to be impaled by so many different things. Like, he's got Barbie dolls and he's got all kinds of stuff just glued and hammered. That's his front yard. And then some neighbors complain about it. The city won't take it down. No, they won't force him to take it down. It's his house, right?
Right.
But it's just, it looks bad. I would not want to be anywhere near that house, but it looks bad.
No. Imagine the inside.
I don't even want to. I have no idea what it would be like. But I mean, that's someone's personality. That's what they, like you said, the pink door has something to do with them, maybe.
If you got 100 gnomes outside, you can be certain there's at least 500 gnomes inside.
Probably. You know? I guess the only good thing about a pink door is that it would look very festive in the holiday season when you decorate it.
Yeah.
With a wreath or something like that.
Some lights.
It would totally look very festive.
Yeah.
That's the positive. But that's 1 month of the year. Or I guess you
Halloween.
What are you doing on a pink Easter? Door with Halloween? Easter, yes. It could be totally an egg.
Yeah.
But Easter is a weekend. Christmas, you know, holidays is a month. Halloween is a day. But some people do it decorating for a month. But pink doesn't work for Halloween, man.
Well,
I'm trying to get around this person's head. I'm trying to get their understanding behind it.
Probably shouldn't try.
What else do you want to share about your doors? Oh, the installers, the crew, everybody. What makes them different? Wood shims, plastic shims?
Depends. Usually wood shims, which is fine. That's not really a big issue. We can do some plastic shims, though we don't find it necessary once we sort of foam in between. It kind of covers it, negates it. Quality control is there. If there's any issues, we warranty it anyway. So the parts and the service. So it's all around pretty clean.
A lot of people asking for glass these days, frosted glass or?
Some glasses, side lights, stuff like that. We do some custom glass on the doors.
Here's a question for you. If you've got a door, let's say the door is 36 and you got 12-inch side lights on it, would you change that door to a larger door? Because yes. I do agree that front doors should be the biggest door of your house, right?
Yeah.
Would you change it? But you can't change it to a massive door. So let's say if the door is 36 and you got 2 12-inch side lights, so now you're talking about a 5-foot opening, right? It's an 80-inch height. Are you changing it to a 5-foot wide door? No, you can't do that.
Not 5. You could go 4. You could do a 42.
The 4, you go 4 and no. You go 4 and then you go a 1-foot side light on one side?
No, so you're saying what's the opening?
5.
So then do 42.
So do a 42 and then you're doing one side light?
Yeah, do one side light, something like that. We'd look at the configuration.
But it looks off.
It depends on the rest of the house, and honestly, that's another thing that comes down to preference. Some people like the offset, that asymmetrical look. Some people don't. Right. Same thing like with windows on a house. You look at a modern home. Sometimes we'll redo a whole face of a home, and they'll shift it like that. They'll do, instead of that like quarter, half quarter, they'll do 3/4 and 1/4 of the window. So one big fixed piece, one operational piece, but then the whole front of the home has to match that.
The other thing that I'm seeing now is a lot of motorized, automatic, app-enabled door opening and closing.
I don't get involved.
I think I'm going to say I don't like it. I don't like more and more technology controlling entry and exit points of a home.
Agreed.
I have a major problem with it because if it's convenient to you, then it's convenient to thieves.
It's completely easy to hack, like all the smart locks.
That's why.
Stuff, very easy to do.
That's why.
Especially if it's Wi-Fi enabled. Easy.
Talking about people, man, nobody puts a chain anymore. Nobody puts a door stopper anymore.
No, it's back to what you said, convenience.
Yeah.
People love convenience. And this is that. I can just go up and pop, you know?
But you got to figure, like, I stopped using the Nest. because I don't trust it, right? Like, I just don't trust the connectivity at that point. Knock on the door, man.
I can assure you that if you keep using your brain as technology comes into play and takes over everything, you'll have a huge competitive advantage.
Oh,
even look at autocorrect with text.
Yeah, I agree.
Some people can't even figure out what to spell anymore. They're just like, they click it. They don't know how to spell it.
That's so true.
So
they're so used to it, right?
Yeah.
And now ChatGPT is doing everything else for them, right? So they don't have to worry about anything.
Right? And then you put somebody on their own with no access to the internet and you say, solve this problem. Good luck.
But that's the difference when you get into construction. We still get old school, even though there's lots of new tools out there, but you still revert right back down to old school.
Yeah.
I think if you're a tradesperson and you don't have a plumb bob in your box somewhere, then you should be questioning certain things, because I think you should teach the younger generation what a plumb bob is first. Everyone's just relying on laser levels. Laser levels need to be calibrated.
Yeah.
Right? So they're not always true. People step on bend levels, all kinds of stuff, so it could be damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Vials could be damaged, all kinds of stuff. So it's like, it doesn't hurt to go old school sometimes.
Agreed.
Just to double check the numbers kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how you get a spaceship on the moon, right? Like, you just double check the numbers, right?
No, I'm just joking.
I think we did and didn't. That's what I think. I think we definitely did get Stanley Kubrick to shoot the version of it.
Yeah.
And then they did get on there, but they released his version first. So we saw Star Wars before we saw the prequels.
Well, that's a perfect NASA answer. Can't confirm or deny.
Right? That's how I look at it, right? The question is, what's going to happen in our lifetime when they actually land on Mars? That's going to be the question. Is it going to be legit, or is it going to be shot again? I don't know.
We need some proof. We need to bring
back. I don't know. Well, Elon is trying to figure that out, and I'm sure they'll have some proof. He'll try to figure out how to do all that stuff. But
you know,
that's all the stuff. They'll need doors on those habitats on there, but there'll be different kinds of doors.
Elon, sign me up.
What don't you like about the door industry? Other than just because you get these guys that are taking advantage of clients.
The two things that I don't like about the door business or the construction business is the habits that we as professionals, and that doesn't include us, it's we, everybody else, that they've instilled in our customers. I really don't like that about
the bad habits, eh?
All the bad habits. And there's so many bad
habits. So are they bad habits or are they stereotypes?
At this point, I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think it's both. People have taken on this persona, the customer side, where, you know, they automatically want to negotiate no matter what you see. You say, that's free. Well, can I get it cheaper? Like, it's just an automatic response. It's like when you walk into the clothing store, can I help you? And you're like, nope. Just looking.
But do those clients do that on every other platform? Like, are they walking into Apple and buying a new iPhone and going, can we get it cheaper?
No, of course not. Because the tone was set that's differently.
That's the price.
Right.
That's the, you want it cheaper? Then choose the one that has less space on it.
Right.
Choose the one that's smaller.
Right.
So you're not discounting anything. You're just offering a product that's different.
And I'm pretty sure Apple works it backwards. They show you the small one. You're like, that's not enough, and you end up paying.
Do you think construction will always be that way? Like, you don't think there'll always be a blanket of like, this is what construction. You can't, because you've got so many people that are doing it the negative way.
I think the only way to answer this question is if we imagine a world where, which might not be so far off, there's no more cash. So if we're in the construction business and there is no more cash and everything's on the books, will it still be this way?
But here's the thing. The construction industry is really good at not putting everything on the books. And I personally have been telling a lot of tradespeople that are working in the industry right now, start ramping up your cash projects.
Mm-hmm.
Because of our government, what's going on.
Yep.
And I think we're being taxed to death.
Yes.
So if you want to legitimately operate a business in construction, you will not be successful because you're 100% legitimate.
Right, but this is the thing, is if they eliminate cash, if we operate under sort of that type of a story.
You can't eliminate cash if you continue taxing more people. We just had the government announce the whole capital gains bullshit.
I know.
So it's like they're thinking about other ways of taxing more bullshit. So it's just like, how much more bullshit are you going to tax? So to the point where people are going to be like, I'm not going to be doing this anymore. Like, people are going to be all you're doing is, back in the 90s, was it the 90s? Yeah, it was the 90s. When they introduced the HST, the GST. Mm-hmm. That's when the cash underground economy started going rampant.
Right.
Because trades were going to clients. Listen, here's the price. If I charge you tax, here's the price. Client says, well, I don't want to charge tax. I want to do it for cash. And that's all it did. So what I'm not saying that all the bad tradespeople were doing more work or whatever. I'm just saying legitimate good people that were doing good work were getting the contract because they were offering that option to clients.
I don't know. I think it really depends on how you're approaching the business. If you want to build something that's saleable at some point in the future, you're not taking cash.
You have to, I agree with you on that.
Be able to show this cash component, which then this cash component is relying upon you being able to hand over relation. It's a mess.
It becomes a mess down the road. I agree with you on that one. But the thing is, to operate a successful business, cash is being king right now. Again, I think in construction, I think that you're less, well, let's talk about that net thing. Like if you're casting a huge net and trying to get as much work as possible, I think you're a more successful tradesperson running a business. I'm not talking about like a manufacturer and selling a product here. That's different. But a tradesperson, you're going to be more successful if you're splitting your jobs, cash, and legitimate.
I get that.
I'm not saying all cash.
That makes sense.
I'm saying like you go in, you got a contract to paint a house for $100,000, whatever. The client says, I want to give you 50.
Yeah.
Cash. I'll put the rest 50 on the books.
Yeah.
They'll agree to it.
Yeah.
And that's it. Then they get the cash markers and then that's it. There's a ledger and then everyone signs. And I'm just like, I'm not trying to educate people on how to do it. I'm just saying that you'll be more successful as a tradesperson if you go down this road because of the limitations when it comes to being legit. There's a huge amount of limitations.
I think that that requires a deeper conversation because we would have to go to each individual tradesperson and ask them what is their definition of success, right? Because if I could show you how to make $25,000 a month net and work half the time that you're working now, taking no cash, and that was enough for you, they'd take it.
Yeah, of course.
You've got other people who build a business, good business acumen, and build and build and build and build and build and build with no real endpoint in mind, just to make more and more and more and more and more. So my first proposition wouldn't be enough. And then you have other people who say, look, I think that there's a servable market. I think that if we really take a look at the business model and who we're trying to serve and how we're trying to serve them and build a process for that and do all this on the front end for free, that we'll be able to build something that's clean and on the books that can be acquired by a portfolio company later.
Yeah.
That's worth, you know, it takes us whatever it takes us to make it, but we sell it for a multiple of that earning because there's a subscription component or a recurring component plus this or that or this, and it's all on the books. And that's worth $5 million to us or $10 million to us in a 3 to 5 years from now if we do it right. All right. So this is a whole different type of person.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on where people want to be. And I honestly believe that the more people I meet, not just in the construction business, but we'll speak to just the construction business, they have good skills, but they have poor business acumen.
Oh, 100%.
Right? And that's unfortunate because everybody's just trying to take care of their family, right? So if we sharpen them in ways that give them leverage to earn more and live better, then maybe then we can take people who meant well and make sure that they stay on that straight and narrow because they're fed. They don't have to do unusual things because they mismanage money, which now they got to trick another client just to cover the loss over here. And this is how these things snowball, aside from just straight up dishonesty, which is a whole nother topic.
I think the best thing that could happen to an unsuccessful business, construction business, is the owner of the business get hurt in some capacity that pulls them out of the game for a period of time so they can reevaluate what's really going on with the business, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not wishing people get hurt. I'm just saying you need to pump the brakes and take a break because it's fast. It's easy and fast to find the clients and prove your skill set and sell the jobs. Mm-hmm. But it's easy and fast to quickly realize you're not making profit. So I've always said over and over on the show, start understanding the business side of entrepreneurship. who gives a shit about the skill side of the business. That skill side is coming into you naturally. You know exactly how to get on a job site. You know exactly what the scope is all about. And you know exactly what tools need to be done and you know what to do. That's just second nature to you. But what's not second nature is running that business. So you need to learn that component. So if they did that.
But that's work.
No, I know it's work.
Now we got to get someone to put down the jet skis, put down the beers, put down the fishing rod, put down the boat, learn something new.
But that's what you
change,
have to do.
Change, right? Get better. First, do it the best you can do it. Practice. Then do it the best it can be done. But that means you have to give up somebody else, which is why I say, like I told you in the beginning, turn down the volume on somebody.
Yeah.
Let me see what you really mean.
But you know what? That work, though, James, is easy. Like, I find the construction industry really forthcoming where you can reach out to people that you think are successful and ask them how they did it, and they'll be more than willing to show how they did it. They'll give you some advice on how to go down so then you don't have to literally reinvent the wheel.
But Manny, that's work.
But it's like you should be doing this.
That means that I got to put away my ego, come knock on your door, sit at your feet as a student and say, will you teach me? And run the risk of you looking at me and saying, no, little man, no.
Then fine. Who cares if that person does that? There's going to be somebody else that might allow you to do that.
I agree with that. Yeah. But how do we teach that? Maybe what we need to be doing is creating a space where this is available and actually not just sit around talking about it and make some change. It sounds like we got an idea right now. Maybe we try and call three people, see who's interested and launch that thing. Right?
It's there. Like, people want it. I know. I know, the younger generation has such a big ego in this industry. They think that they can reinvent this wheel a lot better than how we've already built it.
Deferred gratification.
Yes.
If you could not make money for 5 years, but spend those 5 years learning things, but you got your bills paid.
Yeah.
5 years. And that's a long time. In 5 years from now, you'll never worry about money again.
Do you think the majority of tradespeople would actually do that? Not saying 5 years, but maybe a year. Shut down the business for 1 year to restructure the whole business the way it should be. And while you're restructuring it, you're educating yourself how to run that business properly for the purpose of it being built to the level of a brand that somebody else will acquire it in about 10 or 15 years. And then you can back out of it, take a piece of it, small piece of it while it continues to operate. And then you move on to your next endeavor.
No.
The majority won't. You're going back to the 1%.
That's what I'm saying. It's always the majority won't. But why? What is the mindset that causes someone to not want to do things that are in their favor?
They're missing out on all these jobs right now that they could be doing while they're taking this break from, take a break from construction.
What is this missing out? What are you missing out on? You're missing out on what? Signing yourself up for an average life for the rest of your life? Does that sound fantastic to you?
Most people get into it without even realizing that,
right?
Forget
about it.
Yeah.
Right? And look. For what it's worth, the problem is also the opportunity, right? Yeah. I'll make the sacrifice. I'll do the work. I'll come sit as your student and learn everything I can. I'll go and apply it, bring it back to you and say, look, Manny, I did what you said. That didn't work. This did work. Where do I tweak it? Do you know someone else I could talk to that might be able to put me in position? I'll ask, right? Because why not? It's for the benefit of everybody.
It's challenging for them. Like in... when you're in your 20s and you're trying to figure out what to do, right? You're trying to figure out, you don't want to make as many mistakes as people before you made. So you want to have a better life at that point, right?
Right.
You're trying to figure out, I guess the mindset is you're, how big can you think and how, what you can accomplish, right? But then there's realities too. I mean, this younger generation has an issue with what they're going to be able to afford for a vehicle, what they're going to be able to afford for a house. But I think it all starts with stop going on the vacation, stop doing all the partying and drinking on the weekend or whatever. Stop having to spend so much money, like trying to, I'm hoping that they're cooking more. I'm hoping that they're staying in more. I'm thinking that they are, or they, like, I mean, today with today's food, health and everything, it's just shit. It's all garbage out there. Right. So I'm just assuming that they're probably cooking better food at home, and home cooked meals nowadays are not like how home cooked meals were back in my day. Right.
Yeah. So home cooked meals is McDonald's from Uber.
When we were trying to learn how to cook as a kid and whatever, our parents couldn't cook for whatever reason. It was like fish sticks. Was it even fish in the stick? Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, like that's what the meal was. And you're like, great, it's fish sticks today. But that's like, you wouldn't touch that shit today.
No, look, I think every generation has their own hangups. Like, older people are saying young people can't afford this or that or this. And we're really just making victims out of them. Right? Hard work yesterday is the same as hard work today.
Is there not in history an opportunity in every negative situation?
There is an opportunity in negative situations.
Yeah. Right. So it's like all you have to do is look at, okay, fine. You can complain on what's going on right now. You can look at what's negative about the construction industry. You look at negative what you can afford or not afford. Or you can look at what opportunity can come out of that.
Agreed. If you could, if someone said to me, hey, look, I actually had this conversation a couple of Sundays ago with my mother. I said, look, if God came down right now and said to me, hey, I'm going to let you have as much success as you want, but I'm going to make it hard for you, so hard for you every step of the way. Or you can just do the 9-to-5, save that chunk of your paycheck, spend most of it, and live an easy, average life. I would say, okay, thank you. Fuck you, Lord. I got work to do.
Yeah.
And he'd say, good job, son. And I would just keep doing it. Because you think of it like this. If you live in the country and you drive to the city and it's traffic, you're like, this traffic. But if you live in the city and drove in traffic every single day, it's just a normal day.
Yeah, you get so used to it.
You just get so used to it. So just pretend, and this is my mentality, that your whole life's just going to be hard. And that's what you're waking up to today. My life is going to be hard today, and I'll tackle it. And you'll see that not many days are that hard. Some are, and you survive them, right? I think people get so caught up in other people's opinions, and we all know what opinions are worth, right?
Yep.
So maybe the best thing to do is not concern yourself with other people's opinions, right? And just make sure you have a really damn high opinion of yourself. Make sure that mental chatter is as big as it could be. Why? Because I would rather have an extremely high opinion of myself and be wrong than have a very low opinion of myself and be right.
That's true.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
That's all this is. Let everybody go. Do your work. You're going to die at the end and no one's going to remember anyway. No one's going to care how many doors I made when I'm dead. Right? But hopefully I have enough character to care about how I interact with people and what I leave behind every time that I meet with somebody. It's something of value, at least one thing of value I can give and I can take.
I just don't see a lot of people trying to change the construction industry. I wish I would see more people trying to change. I think right now a lot of people are manipulating the construction industry on so many fronts, right? They're just trying to figure out, how do I monetize as much as possible on whatever I'm doing? And then I'm getting out of the game.
Business acumen.
That's all it is, right?
It's just a lack of business acumen. Because think of it like this, okay? Simple. If you have 100 guys that are mediocre at best, right? How much might they probably make per year in the construction business? Let's just say that it's 100 framers.
So, I mean, let's just round off the number. Let's just give them $100,000. That's what they're going to make.
$100,000 right? Each.
Yeah.
10 guys. So if they did, like some cultures do, 100 average guys get together and they invest a portion of what they do all into something else. And 10 years from now, being average with what they all invested consistently because they understood the law of compounding, where would they be?
They'd be a lot further.
Where is the church? 10% of everybody's income into the pot. Where is the church?
Yeah.
Right? So there's the truth that people are looking for is here, right? The plan works, the people don't works. And that's what I say, right? People want to get before they give, but mama didn't say you got to get before you give, right? But people still try to get what they can before they give something.
The problem is that people already look at all the work that needs to be done, and they say, I'm going to stick with 9-to-5.
Hey,
They can.
This is madness. Like right. building things, you're sick.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. So it's a special set of us that want to do this madness. Okay. But for the ones of us that do go down this road and maybe do better than others, I think if we're having the thought of knowing it's better, then we also have an obligation to figure out how to relay that message to as many people as possible, which this is your contribution to that.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm trying to find ways. I meet people and I try to build a business that leaves people better than I found them. For now, that's my contribution to that. Right. But the idea is that there's so much to fix in every industry.
So we're the majority of the industry doesn't want to bother fixing all of this stuff, right?
Because it's easy to rest on your laurels and be comfortable where you are than yeah. have to be in growth and change all the time.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. Nobody wants to actually, like you said several times already on the show, nobody wants to just do the work before getting paid. Everybody wants to get paid to do the work.
But it doesn't make sense. The universe delivers nothing like that.
Yeah.
The universe delivers nothing like that. You want corn? Plant the crop.
Yeah.
Right?
You tend to the crop. The work. Yeah.
Right? And then you get the yield. You don't get the yield and then you plant, you know, it. But the mentality is that. Look at it. You see it and you're like, but then you hear the cries of these same people. They're like, oh, life is hard. Governments, debts, credit cards, taxes. Buddy, if you made $10 million a year, would you be worried about taxes?
I'd still be worried about it because the amount of taxes that you would be paying based on that increment.
Move to a place where the taxes
are less. Then that's where you'd be getting involved with other people that have that $10 million and they would be letting you in on
right.
how you do this
right.
and you don't pay or you don't pay as much as lower middle.
Right.
Simple as that.
Right. But they'd rather stay in a place where, well, I'm gonna harvest the crop without planting it first. And they'll stay in that same place for 100 years. And that's why when I meet people who say, yeah, well, I've got 30 years of experience in the business. You've got 1 year that you did 30 times.
That's right? True. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to talk to me, then
if you've done it the same over and over, you're not willing to adapt and you don't understand where this can be improved,
yeah.
where it can excel.
Yeah.
Then you haven't done it 30 years. You've done it 1 year, 30
times. That's right. And I get irritated by that and I get sort of fired up about that because that person then goes to regurgitate that shit to somebody else who then goes and lives their life that way and on and on. That's crazy.
Is it all because they want to show off? Everybody wants to show off for success for other people that are complete strangers that are following them, that want to assume they're successful.
I wouldn't even want to speculate, but do you think that if you had sort of millions or anything worthwhile and you show off to other people, would you say that those people probably have less than you, not the same or more?
Probably, yeah.
Right. Because people who have the same or more than you don't give a shit about what you have.
Yeah, they don't.
Right? So yeah. Another just, what is that? Why would you do that? But this is a mental game, right?
Because we're so consumed with what the Joneses are thinking about us.
Who are the Joneses?
I know, no, but I mean, I'm just the digital Joneses out there. Everyone's
I get what you mean,
about
but it's
it,
like,
right?
Who are they?
But the thing is, yeah, you should be at any age now understanding who gives a shit about them.
Yeah.
Just give a shit about yourself and who's in your inner circle. Simple as that, man.
Agreed. But the problem, again, is also the opportunity. The more they stay, whoever they are, focused on those things, still competition over here.
Yeah.
Right? And I like that.
I just like seeing people change the construction industry for a positive. I don't like seeing people trying to portray changing the industry
yeah.
for a profit.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand it. I have a major problem with it, right? I've always had a problem with it where it's like, I think it's no different than how you said it. It's no different in construction. You've got to do the work first to prove who you are, and then you will receive all the rewards from that. Simple
right.
as that.
Right.
But the problem is that you get a lot of people realizing, hang on, that's wrong. You got to just get the money first, and then we'll somewhat prove that we have some skill set.
Yeah.
But that's wrong. I don't get it.
But how do you, with all the years of experience that you have in the business, how do you look at somebody and decipher between the two?
Oh, that happens in minutes nowadays, right? If I'm speaking to somebody, I already get the sense of where they're going with it. I already get the sense that they do or don't care about the industry.
Okay.
Right? And you can care and not care at the same time. So you can, like, it's almost a performance at that point. You're just seeing, I get upset because the construction industry is easily manipulated, where you can take advantage of different levels of construction to make money. No different than what you were talking about earlier about the different brands and other window door manufacturers selling product for three times of what you're selling it for.
Yeah.
That's just manipulation, right? So they look at our industry like, I think it's a numbers game, man. I could, like, there's how many homes in this neighborhood here? How many front doors in this neighborhood here? Let's calculate how many doors. Okay, so we door knock and we talk to everybody and we sell them on BS.
Yep.
We could probably get 10% of all these doors here. Yep. And now we've got a successful business. But no talk about pride, craftsmanship, quality, brand. No talk about that stuff. It's just profit. So when
right.
you put the profit profit cart before everything else, you're just going to make so much money and then it's going to eventually fail. And you'll fold up shop and then you'll do the window. He'll show up windows next. And keep on going. From windows, it'd be roofing. From when, like, it just keep on going that way.
I agree with that 100%. And when you pay attention over a long enough time horizon, right, these people never really do become successful because let's say that they make $5 million a year or whatever it is using a model like this. Let's say financially they have money, right? But they're piss poor morally. Their character is no good. And what is the byproduct of a person with poor character? That they're a magnet for other people with poor character.
Yeah.
So they never get to a place where they're like, well, what are they doing up there? Well, you can't get up here because you have poor character and you reek of it. You reek of it. So you stay where you are.
It's
and
true.
We'll stay where we are.
As I've gotten older, I do not have the patience for people I disagree with. Like, if someone wants to just be negative around me,
yeah.
I don't have the patience to be around it.
No, negativity, I agree
with. I'd rather be someplace else other yeah. than here listening to this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just rather, like, there's no internal value for me to absorb those words.
No.
And sometimes I almost look at it like, let's say I've got a counter on my ears on how many words I'm allowed to hear for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know what that counter is, right? I have no idea what that number is. But I just lost 20, 30 words there by listening to that bullshit.
I love that.
I'm out of here now.
I love that.
I'd rather listen to other words from other people that have interesting things to say.
And like, that's what it is, noise.
Simple.
Negative noise, positive noise. Yeah. I don't want to hear that. I agree with you on that, 100%. And people have a tendency to be, like, you'll show them a better way. And you can look at a decision and say, well, that's obviously better than this. But they will fight tooth and nail for
because
of
the work.
For whatever reason. I think
they don't want to put the effort in. They don't want
to. Some people like their chaos. They like to keep it close. They never want to let it just be easy. No, it's got to be hard. It doesn't got to be hard.
How many forks in the road do people, like, you're constantly going up against forks in the road. Right. But I just feel like a majority of people these days are choosing the easier path.
And they can. It's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a choice. But what comes easy, right?
Yeah.
Is it worth it? Like, life is meant, in my opinion, so this is my perspective, life is meant to be hard. Anything that you've ever done that was worthwhile, I don't know, you've got kids?
No.
You built businesses, you've done all these things.
Yeah.
Right? It was hard.
Yeah.
You built this, it was probably hard. Right? It takes time. It takes money. You got to think about it. You're always thinking about it. You wake up in the middle of the night, cold sweats. You're thinking about, how do I make this work? I got an idea. That's a way better life to live than some docile, thoughtless, effortless, kick my feet up, let my body get soft kind of life, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you.
Right.
And what I like is when you look back on all the hard things that you learned or you experienced, it doesn't feel so hard at that point now.
That's the best part of the hindsight. It seemed easy.
It didn't seem that hard. But when it was happening, it seemed like the worst and hardest part of your life. And now when you look back on it, you go, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That was nothing.
Because you're strong now.
Yeah. That's how it is. That's how it works, right? I agree with you. So it's like, that's why I want these younger kids to experience these hard hurdles. They have to achieve these things, right?
But they've got to build something, right? Like, yeah, you got to have sleepless nights. You got to, like, I think that a lot of the chatter in people's minds, and I've been there too, is negative. It's very, very negative, yeah, right? And you've got to find ways, like your perspective on, you know, the amount of words that I can hear that are negative or a counter, right? You got to have these types of things that sometimes you just make up and live by that, right? You need to have these types of things. Like, if I had a thought and I was like, oh, you know, I don't feel like I'm looking my best today, or some kind of negative thing, I follow up every sentence now in my life with, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because who cares?
Yeah.
They're going to talk about you whether or not you're successful or not.
Yeah, it's going to get done anyway.
Right? You work so hard. Oh, James, you work so hard. You don't have any time for life. I wouldn't want that life. Why don't you slow down?
It's funny you bring that up, James, because I was just having a conversation this morning with a trade that I know really well. And I proposed two roads.
Yeah.
And he was quick to go to the easy road. I was like, dude, why are you going there? He goes, it just makes more sense. That's what the road should be. And I was like, and I didn't agree with him. I disagreed with him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's 28, 29. And I'm like, that's, you paint two scenarios.
Yeah.
And that's where he went. And I was like, I don't get it.
Did he tell you why he chose that?
He just said it made more sense to go that way.
Interesting.
Right? But we both understood that it was the easiest, it was the easier way.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to go through and experience hardships if you go down this way.
Yeah.
So I guess that him, his mindset is, I don't want to deal with hardships. I rather have just direct line sight, go there, and that's it, done. But that's not going to
shape or mold anybody. Like a requirement for a guarantee.
Yeah, which is not always guarantee, right?
Right.
Like, you can choose the easiest path, go down that road, do everything you're supposed to do, be that fucking person, and then not succeed, not have any value in your life whatsoever. And you thought it was going to be sunshine and rainbows, right?
Right. But if you go, like, you know, the law of inertia, I mean, if you go too far in one direction, it's hard to come back.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I would say, what's the scariest part of this is that people go so far down one direction. And they know, like, each step, okay, it's incrementally worse. It's incrementally worse until they get way far down. And they're like, I wish. And that's how we hear the stories of, you know, older people, you know, they're retiring or they're, you know, in their retirement homes or on their deathbeds. They're like, I wish that I smiled more.
Regret.
I wish that I, and that's a dangerous
thing. That's the number one thing that is expressed in all long care homes, whatever.
Yeah.
Every elder person says, I wish I would have done. It's all this regret.
Yeah. It's not even hard to get rich the average way.
Yeah.
Put a little bit of money away every single month and invest it decently and you'll retire okay. Right? That's the easiest way. The path is laid. It's clear. Almost guaranteed.
It's got to be social media influencing. It's got to be Bitcoin. It's got to be like finding the pot of gold and the Irishman.
You know what I mean?
It's got to be easy. That's it. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. You won't appreciate it. And all it's going to do, it's just going to amplify the bad portions of you.
Yeah.
That's what they've said. Whenever people have gotten wealthy or whatever, and you see that person the way they become, it's just an amplification of who they really were at their core.
Yeah.
So it's like you need to go through these hardships to humble you down. To understand that you're not going to be that dick when you are successful. And when you are successful, you'll have no interest in being a show off. You'll totally be interested in wanting to give back and help with others because you know how hard they're going through. Right. That's part of why I did this show is like, I've been fortunate enough to speak to so many people about what they are looking to do, what they're looking to accomplish, right? I love the fact that people will call. Like, someone was between the two shows today, someone was calling me that has worked with me before, and he's like, man, you got a second? I was like, yeah, I got 15 minutes right now. I want to pick your brain. And then he gave me a scenario, and he wanted my opinion, and I gave him my opinion.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, I was kind of thinking about going that route. I just wanted to confirm it. And I was like, that's how I would go. And we dissect other options. And I just said, based on what you've just described to me, this is the path where I would go. This is how I would handle it. If you're already thinking about that way, then that's great. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I would go, yeah, okay, cool. So then he said, I'm going to go that way now. I was like, okay, cool, great. But that's what I like about the show is that there's an opportunity for people to reach out, discuss with somebody else that may or may not have gone through the exact scenario,
yeah,
but understands, they respect my opinion that I'll give them. I won't give them their bullshit, right? It's simple as that.
Well, you're in a very unique position, right? Like this is a very, like you're a center of influence now.
Yeah.
For what will be over time, a lot of people. A lot of people will grow to rely on just you because you're the source to everybody else. And I think that's very valuable as a business. I mean, you obviously already know this. I'm just saying it.
Yeah.
But like that is the key to what you're doing. You're creating so much value to anyone that comes across the conversations that you've taken the time to build. This is a very big contribution back out into the construction industry. Yep.
Right? I think so.
Yeah.
Still going on. We got to do the 12 questions, James.
What do we got?
Did we touch everything on the doors? We touched everything
on
the doors.
I think so, yeah.
I think we do. I just want to let everybody know, find him on IG at Door Supply Official. His website, www.doorsupply.com, and his email, build@doorsupply.com. What is your favorite construction word or phrase?
Word or phrase? Go fuck yourself.
What is your least favorite tool?
Hammer.
I still like my hammer, my wood handle hammer. I'm an old school guy. What
with
do you
the
miss?
The rubber with the holes?
No. This is a stiletto. It's a wood. I paid $100 for it. I'm like, I like it. I don't need a titanium moon grade hammer. I don't need that shit. What do you miss from your childhood?
I think the trailer.
The trailer?
Childhood at the trailer park. I was born in Windsor, but I grew up in Leamington. So there's like a leisure lake that we used to go to.
Okay.
And it was like, basically grandma had a trailer up there. My uncle had a trailer up there and we'd go and there would be this track and field every year that we'd all the kids, all the parents, everybody's drunk riding the golf carts and we'd hop around potato sack races. Bobby,
that sounds like fun, man.
I miss that.
Yeah. What construction sound do you love?
Cutting wood.
What's your favorite beverage?
Gin and tonic.
What turns you on and off in construction?
On the opportunity, off the bad habits in the industry.
Yeah, there's lots. Favorite curse word?
Fuck.
What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
One that I don't have to drive myself.
Self-driving vehicle?
Or maybe someone's like driving? Rolls Royce, something like that.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Hedge fund manager.
What profession would you not like to do?
Septic tank guy?
Yeah, that one comes up probably the most. It comes up. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You did the hard work and you made it.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks.
Appreciate it, man. Coming on the show, talking doors. Anybody that wants it interested, they could just reach out to you.
Yeah.
Where's the shop?
It's in Concord.
In Concord?
Yeah.
They can come, visit?
They can come if they book an appointment. Usually I'm not there, but yeah, we can make it happen.
Yeah, so if they want to see it, they can see it?
They can come and see it.
Okay, so they can just reach out through either IG or through the website or email and then go check out the product.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We're out of here.